Mike Seider did.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Welcome aboard. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg. It is Wednesday, October 16th. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Vix.
How are we doing today, buddy? You're looking good.
That's what I like to hear. Trying. My old
succeeding.
Age.
Succeeding, buddy.
And you.
Not trying, succeeding.
And you, buddy. So the Flames are 4-4 to start the season, and that's been pretty cool to see. It's been a real cool start to the season, a very, I think, positive and encouraging first four games of the year. I believe that's just under 5% of the season is now in the books for the Flames. And in the first hour of Wednesday's Flames Talk, we spent a good chunk of that hour talking about what a 4-0 start could mean for a playoff spot. Go listen and yell at that podcast if you think it's too premature to be using the P word. But we did talk about that in the first hour. Let me tell you this. I have been extremely impressed with what we've seen over the course of these 12-plus periods. Because I believe they're fully deserving of all four wins. I don't think there's a fluke in there. I don't think there's a night where you're like, you caught a team on an off night and, take the 2 points and run. But, you weren't really deserving of that. Like, I think they are full marks for a 4-0 start. I really do. They've won their four games in different ways. The one constant has been, or one of the main constants has been, their work rate and their work ethic, their commitment, all of those things, good stretches, bad stretches in the four games they've played. That part has always been there. It's been non-negotiable. And honestly, I think that work rate, that commitment, that sellout, all that type of stuff is part of their identity. I really think that that's something that is going to be a part of this mix for the rest of the season. But seeing them find different ways to win has been encouraging. And I thought Tuesday night, 3-1 over Chicago, another way. So Vancouver, that crazy resilient comeback, right? The way things went in the first period, the way it ended. Philadelphia, the home opener. That's one of those wide open track meet type games. Edmonton was a hard fought, next to nothing separating the two teams at 5-on-5. The Flames just stuck with and eventually wore out their opponent. But that was a really close game that the Flames ended up winning because they stuck with it longer. And Chicago was a real character type win for me. Like, they were sloppy at times on Tuesday night. They were disjointed at times. They had one of the worst power plays I've ever seen in the second period. But you know what? They were playing a third game in four nights early in the season that was clearly a grind of a night, and they still worked their way through it. And I think that's something that needs to be highlighted, because you have to win games like that if you're going to get to where you want to go. You have to win games like that if you want to be a playoff team or a playoff competitive team. You got to find ways to win on the nights that you're not at your best, yep. You're not feeling your best, your legs don't feel like they're fully there, all that type of stuff. And credit to the Flames. They did that on Tuesday night with a 3-1 win over Chicago.
Yeah, they've been playing a lot of gut check hockey so far this season. And yes, it's young. And yes, we're talking about just over 4% of the regular season. But they have won a variety of ways, which you have outlined. But the reoccurring theme in all of them is that work rate, is that gut check sort of mentality where it doesn't matter what's happened in the game. What matters is the next shift. And whoever's hopping over the boards for that next shift has to go out there and give 100%. Whether it's on the forecheck, whether it's blocking shots, whether it's delivering a hit, doesn't matter what sort of facet of the game it is, it has to be done at 100%. And it's encouraging to see the Flames win in a variety of ways where we didn't necessarily see that last year or the year before, where a team can come in, the Calgary Flames, if they typically didn't have their A game, they didn't stand a chance. It didn't matter who the opponent was. And the Chicago Blackhawks are the perfect example of that, where they had a hell of a time beating the Chicago Blackhawks over the course of the past two seasons. But on Tuesday night, the Blackhawks come into town, and I'm sure the Flames are well aware of the narrative around the Chicago Blackhawks when it comes to team success or lack thereof in recent memory. Didn't have their best game, but still found a way to put together a game that was better than Chicago and come away with 2 points. And that was sort of the gutsy, resilient, find a way to win game, as you mentioned, the third and four nights.
Talked about that a little bit with a couple of our post-game guests on Tuesday. Here's assistant coach Dan Lambert when he sat down with Mick Derrick and I on Flames Talk post-game, talking about just that, the, you know, fighting through, finding a way, and how much there's something to be said about that.
These are the tough games to win because you easily can lose those games for all those factors. And I thought that, like I said, I mean, we had guys that stepped up, and you need that whenever your schedule is difficult, and you never make excuses, but the reality is there. So, yeah, very proud of the group.
And this was Jake Bean, who joined us from the dressing room on Flames Talk postgame.
That was probably our least favorite out of the first four, but sometimes those are the best ones to get the win. So we had to grind it out a little bit tonight. 3-4, like, that's tough. And it was a good win by the boys. A little bit of character here to show, kind of keep our foot on the gas there.
Lots of hockey left. 78 games to go. I'm fully aware of that, but we have seen some real positive things from this group in the course of their 4-for-4 start. And look, I know that an 82-game season, they will lose.
No, they're going 82-0.
They will lose multiple games in a row.
Oh, okay.
That it's unavoidable. No team
has ever gone 82-0.
Even that 62-win Boston Bruins team or whatever it was, 63-win Boston Bruins team, they lost consecutive games. Like, it happened. They will lose. They will have a losing streak. That'll all happen. But the confidence being built right now in terms of their ability to win games in different ways is something that they can take with them through the rest of the season. And I just think, yeah, even Jake Bean said it, that was not our favorite of the four, because that was their sloppiest game so far. That was their more disjointed game so far, their most disjointed game so far. That was the night where maybe they spent the most time defending. But while they were defending, they didn't give up a lot of egregious opportunities. Mm-hmm. They still were the more dangerous team on Tuesday night. And they still found a way, and they had to sell out, and they had to maybe block more shots and look a little muckier and in the mud than they would have liked, but they still found a way. Like, those games build confidence too. So the next time their legs feel like cement on the second half of a back-to-back or a third game in four or a fourth game in six, yeah, that happens to every team in the NHL, and the teams that win more than they lose find ways to battle through and still find ways to win. And so I just think that it's important to highlight the Flames have done that through four games, and winning in different ways is an important thing to build to.
It certainly wasn't a Picasso, as one member of the organization joked to me post-game, but it's the type of game, as you mentioned, that builds belief that the Calgary Flames can win in a variety of different ways, whether it's sort of the run and gun, whether it's having to come back from an early deficit, which they've done multiple times already this season. It just builds the group's mentality that regardless of what happens over the course of the 60 minutes, the Flames are equipped mentally and physically to overcome that, to put themselves in a position to win more often than not. And it's worked through four games, but it's not those four games. Yeah, it's a small sample size, and we'll keep repeating that when we're only a week and a half into the regular season. Week into the regular season, pardon me. But what it helps is later on down the road when you don't have your A game, you're able to draw back on past experiences. Or if you fall down 3-0 or 4-1 in the first period, you draw back on your experiences where you can go, hey, we did it then, so let's just go out there and do it again because we've shown that we can do it in the past. Who's to say we can't do it in the future?
Text line's open at 960-960. Mike writes in, yes, they're playing with team play. You're right about having to win like they did last night. If they could have beat those type of teams last year, they may have been in the playoffs. Yes, we all know how much of a thorn teams like Chicago and San Jose have been in Calgary's side over the last couple of years. So, you know, that's a better Chicago team than they've been.
Yep.
And give the Hawks credit. I mean, they played hard too. You know, Bedard had his looks.
Seven of them.
Seven shots. I think 10 attempts. I think he had 5 scoring or 6 scoring chances. Like, Bedard had his looks. And, you know, Taylor Hall had his dangerous looks. They had some stretches on the power play, but the Flames fought through it. And you know what else? Sometimes you need a really good goaltender. That's why I named Dustin Wolf number one star on Tuesday night, because Dustin had to be the last line of defense. And even though the Flames did a nice job of limiting 10 Bellers, when the Hawks did get to the slot, when the Hawks did get to the house, Wolf was there to make a couple of big stops, and he again looked boring, and that's good.
That's a compliment.
Yeah, yeah. When I say Dustin Wolf looks boring, that's the best compliment you can give him, because when he's boring and routine, it means he's seeing it the way that you want him to see it. And that was all of Tuesday against Chicago. At no point were you like, holy, did he have to scramble to make that stop? And the goal that beat him, that's a hell of a deflection from Nick Foligno. Basically the same deflection that Kuzmenko scored on to end up giving the Flames the lead they wouldn't relinquish. But, you know, Foligno goes to the front of the net. Nice job by Seth Jones to put it on net. And Dustin Wolf thinks that thing's going into his chest, so he's in great position. And then Foligno goes right under the bar and pops it down between his legs. And that's just, you're not making that stop. Doesn't matter who you are. Don't think Dustin Wolf being 6'4 or 6 feet made a difference on that one.
Doesn't change that.
So sometimes you need your goalie to be the last line of defense. There's a Sherlock Holmes moment for you. And he was. But you know what? Sometimes you need to rely on him. They did, and he was there for him.
But it just kind of speaks to the fact that this version or this iteration of the Calgary Flames has to win with depth. And that doesn't just necessarily mean depth scoring or depth on the blue line. You're going to need different players to step up on different nights to deliver. We saw the fourth line certainly do that. We saw Dustin Wolf certainly do that. And the way that this team is built is you're probably going to have different heroes night in, night out. Sure, when you get into a situation where you've got a 1A, 1B goaltending sort of rotation going, more often than not, one of your goalies is going to step up, but it could be Vladar, it could be Wolf. But you look through the forward ranks, it's not like Nazem Kadri is going to be the hero every night, or Andre Kuzmenko, or Blake Coleman, or Michael Backlund, so on and so forth. This is a team that's built to need somebody stepping up each and every night. And the fact that the Calgary Flames have this depth, particularly up front, to, okay, if line one isn't going, line two is. If line two isn't, line three is. If three doesn't happen to be going, line four is. That bodes well for the Calgary Flames, and to me is one of the biggest reasons why they've been able to start 4-0.
This reads, these are the types of games over the last 2 years they found ways to lose that suddenly they're finding ways to win, I think, as well, is what we're trying to sum up. Dan in Lethbridge says they may never lose again. This reads, Dustin Wolf makes every save look routine, and so far this season, I think that's very true. TJ writes, Flames are in a position to sell cap space for draft picks and prospects and depth for the playoffs. That is fair, because, you know, they'll have the cap space. And that's actually a really interesting point. Like, say that they are closer to the trade deadline in a position where they're fighting for a playoff spot or protecting a playoff spot. And all of a sudden a team comes to them and says, hey, like, we need to move this contract out. But he can still play, right? All of a sudden you can bring a guy in, give yourself some added depth, and you don't have any worry about your cap. That's for sure.
The only thing that you'd have to keep into consideration is your 23-man roster limit, because as it stands right now, the Flames have a little over $18.5 million in cap space. That certainly makes you a major player at the deadline. Not so much in the big splashy
acquisitions. The good news is once the deadline is passed,
you're past
the 23-man, you're going to have 72 players on your roster as long as you're cap compliant, right?
Yeah, so you can bring in two or three expiring contracts that help facilitate deals. You can be a major player at the deadline without being that big splashy acquisition or that big sell-off. You can simply help other teams facilitate trades, weaponize that cap space, and grab a couple extra assets.
I'm telling you, like, there are certain things. Like, look, Ryan Pike has made a positive impact in everybody's lives, including mine. But I will go to my grave saying the most important things that Ryan Pike has instilled on me are just the way he simplifies things that make my brain hurt. Like, after the trade deadline, have as many players as you want, just be cap compliant. Playoffs hit, have as many players as you want, and go $700 million over the cap. That's fine. Or the way that he has explained the waiver exemption rule to me. Once you've cleared, if you come back up, you've got 30 days on the NHL roster or 10 games on the NHL roster until you are waiver eligible again, so on and so forth. So that's just a little blow of the kiss to Ryan Pike. This reads, This conversation just goes to show the mental state of a locker room is by far the most important aspect of team sport. You're only as strong as the weakest link of the chain, is the old saying. Guys that were moved out may not have been the all-for-one mentality, and perhaps scaling down on skill to recoup in buy-in mentality is the difference between winning and losing those not-so-exciting games. Jeremy and McKenzie says, I'd say the Flames' power play is way better than it was last season, almost goal or over a goal per game so far. And, you know, I still think the power play has some big steps or important improvements to make, but they've been productive, and they've definitely made that old adage come true. It's not how many, it's when you score them, because they've Mackenzie Weegar's power play goal in Vancouver, that just tied the game, even though they hadn't really been very good on the power play prior. Kuzmenko's power play goal Tuesday night against Chicago came after one of the worst power plays I've ever seen in my life. Like, that was horrendous. Well, they reset. They're like, that was bad. Let's go and be better this time. And they were. And Kuzmenko scores on a delayed that was going to make it 5-3. Nice redirect. Nice job by Huberdeau to break. He breaks a stick. Goes to the bench, hustles, gets back there, puts a nice shot on net, bam, it's 2-1. The power play's been good so far, and it's scored at important times.
Yeah, it's sitting at 28.6% on the season. That's eighth best in the NHL. If you can float and hover around that 25% mark, the 1-4 mark, you're happy with that. It's an improvement over last season. But to your point, what's more important than maybe the frequency is where this is going to sound. It's the timing of when you score them, because the power play can either give you a lot of momentum or absolutely wipe out any momentum you've built. And the Calgary Flames, for the most part this season, when their power play hasn't been clicking, they've managed to dump that idea out of the back of their head, reset, go again, and be a lot more effective.
This reads, if things keep going this way, do your best to make the playoffs and trade Kuzmenko, Mantha, Vladar still at the deadline. Put your young guys in pressure spots to be able to learn top six roles post deadline and playoff time while playing meaningful games. This will expedite the development of those young guys. Your odds of finishing low enough to get a first line center in the draft are minimal. They just aren't bad enough. Brad writes, 25 games, we'll know. They'll be 9-11-5. So Brad's expecting a large drop-off here. This is from Derek. Don't you only have 50 contract spots? Correct. But that usually isn't a concern. Like, you're not...
I believe the Flames are at 45 or 46 right now.
So they're not going to be adding that many players that they're up on the contract limit. What else we got? Jared and Seton. What surprised me is how much of the first four games the Flames have held a lead in. That's very true. And finally, Mick says, I just can't believe how ridiculous Flames fans are. Playoffs, are you kidding? This team isn't making the playoffs. They're going to finish just out and give the 11th pick to the Habs, wasting another year, just like most of the last 30 years. That comes from Mick.
I mean, in all fairness, 71.4% of teams that have started 4-0 have made the playoffs since 05-06. On the flip side, I guess 29.6 have missed.
Yeah.
28.6.
Yeah. Good stuff on the text line. Dustin Wolf has made 68 on 72. He's at a .944 save percentage. Let me just talk a little bit about his start. He doesn't look too small to me. He doesn't look like a guy who who's in over his head at the NHL level to me through two games this year or any of his NHL time to this point. Again, as Kevin Woodley always says, you don't know until you know about a guy's ability to be a number one NHLer. And I subscribe to that rule all day, all night. But so far, one thing I'm quite certain of is Dustin Wolf doesn't belong in the American League. He belongs in the NHL. He can play in this league. And this is the league that's for him. At what level, caliber, and role Dustin Wolf is able to take on for the rest of his NHL career, that still needs to be determined. But there's no doubt in my mind the league that Dustin Wolf belongs in. That's the league he's in right now.
He hasn't looked like an adventurer, and that's step one for Dustin Wolf in his quest to becoming a full-time NHLer. And he did a pretty good job of frustrating Connor Bedard last night, and that's a player that has one of the best shots in the National Hockey League. I know he's only a 22-goal scorer as a rookie, but his release and his ability to be deceptive in executing that release and using defensemen's legs and changing the angles and shot locations is absolutely elite. Dustin Wolf was certainly a match for Connor Bedard. And through what we've seen, through 120 minutes of Dustin Wolf being in the net, that's an A-plus grade for him.
Somebody texted in a little earlier. I know Dan Vladar is currently sitting at an 880, but he's up over 940 if you take out the first period against Vancouver. And honestly, the first period against Vancouver doesn't rest on his shoulders.
He didn't get a lot of help in that first period. There was a lot of great A's.
Or by help, any help at all.
Touché.
Since the first period against Vancouver, Dan's let in 2 goals in 5 periods. So you can be like, I think goaltending period has been a strength for them too, and a big reason why they're 4-for-4. And another reason why I think you can be encouraged about what you're seeing right now.
Absolutely. And it was one of the biggest question marks going into training camp. And then you saw through the preseason, all 3 goalies, Devin Cooley included, played really well, but that's still preseason. That doesn't necessarily count for much, particularly when you hit October 8th or October 7th, whatever the opening night was for the Calgary Flames. But now you get into the regular season, you've gotten 2 very quality starts from Dustin Wolf. And a credit to Dan Vladar, even though that first period in Vancouver didn't go well, once he got past that first intermission, he was a very much a primary reason why the Calgary Flames were able to come back, because he held the fort to buy his team some time to get back into it.
There's been a lot of talk about Justin Kirkland over the last few games for good reason. Matt Coronato just played a hell of a game against the Chicago Blackhawks on Tuesday night.
One of, if not his best in the NHL.
I thought he was great. It has been evident to me since training camp and the preseason began that all of Matt's work, and he worked a ton with Danielle Fujita over the summer. Like, DF is one of the best in the business when it comes to, I mean, you talk to Michael Stone or Connor Zeri or Jacob Pelche or Matt Coronato about how much their skating has improved at the highest level. Like, we're talking about guys who have got to the NHL because they're elite skaters compared to almost everybody on the planet. So to then have Danielle Fujita push you at that level to another level, that's hard to do. And so credit to DF and credit to these guys for working with her and throwing themselves into it. And Matt Coronato looks significantly quicker than he has at any point in his brief NHL or pro career. And we saw it on the empty netter. We saw it on the hustle on his first goal. Matt Coronato in a fourth line role playing just over 12 minutes on Tuesday night, just put himself back in the lineup for Saturday against Seattle as well.
And a tip of the cap, because he had 2 shifts in the final 4 minutes protecting a 1-goal lead in a game where the Flames didn't necessarily look like world beaters. The trust that Ryan Huska had in Matt Coronato, or maybe on the flip side, the reward he wanted to give Matt Coronato for such a dependable game, a really solid game, was to, all right, we're going to put you in a situation that might be uncomfortable. It might be a first for you at the NHL level. You need to help us close out this 1-goal lead. Scores an empty netter, pushes it to 2. The Calgary Flames win. Matt Coronato, for me, that was his best game in the NHL.
And almost a year to the date, after scoring his first NHL goal, he scored his first goal of this season. And keeping that fourth line together makes nothing but sense for the time being. Like, how do you break up those three right now? The way Kirkland's playing, the way Coronado's playing. After 1 period of play, the Flames had generated 6 high-danger scoring chances over at Natural Stat Trick, and all 6 of them were when that line was on the ice.
Well, and you didn't even mention Ryan Lomberg, and this is a quote from Ryan Huska. I might be paraphrasing.
The Lamborghini with the little burnout spin there.
Lomberg doesn't leave them a choice, so that's how they play. Yeah, he is the motor to line. And he is somewhat, I mean, it's still early, but we'll see how it plays out. He very much, to me, is a symbol, like the heartbeat of the team, with how he plays and how the Calgary Flames have to play in order to be successful. It's that all-out mentality. It's the do anything you can, do everything you have to do in order to put this team in a position to be successful. To me, it's sort of the epitome of what Ryan Lomberg is.
Well, and I mean, a guy who has turned himself into the player that Lomberg is, from where he was to where he is now. Like, yeah, if I'm on
that's
that line,
work ethic.
If I'm Matt Coronato or if I'm Justin Kirkland and I see that guy with a Stanley Cup ring and guy who was never drafted and started on an AHL-only deal and had to go on a tryout to, you know, get himself into an NHL organization and then has turned himself into what he is now, yeah, I'd hop on board the Lamborghini as well.
The only issue is the coach is going to say...
Usually have two seats, though, so...
Well, who's riding shotgun?
They both can. One can sit on the other's lap, and then you're good.
There you go. The only problem is the coach is going to go, you see Ryan Lomberg, you can't let him outwork you, but it's impossible to outwork Ryan Lomberg, it feels like.
Oh, it's a good... It's something good to chase.
Absolutely. Then. Sets the standard.
Steinberg and Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, let's dive in on the rest of this Pacific Division, which, by the way, the Flames sit on top of through 1 week of their regular season. Welcome back. Steinberg along with you here on Flames Talk. And it's Wednesday, which means we say hello to our Pacific Division insider. Jonathan Davis joins us now from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Hello, JD.
How are you, Pat?
I'm good, man. How have the bookmakers enjoyed Calgary's 4-4 start?
I haven't dabbled with the Flames yet. You know, not as daring as others. You're definitely a very profitable team right now, for sure.
Yes, for sure they would be a quite profitable team. Let's dive in on this Pacific Division. We've got some interesting things that we're looking at right now. And let's start with the Los Angeles Kings in your neck of the woods. What's going on with Darcy Kuemper? Give us the update on Darcy and LA's goaltending situation.
Well, he's dealing with what they're referring to as a lower body injury. The big the joke here in Southern California is that people really think it's whiplash after having to look at the red light go off 8 times on Monday against Ottawa. But
that was some game.
They say lower. Yes, it was. They're saying lower body injury, so not sure when he's back. But, you know, they've recalled Phoenix Copley on an emergency basis. And it's a big save, Dave, tonight as they're getting set to host Toronto. The game's already started. I'm actually down in Anaheim tonight for the Ducks and Utah. So I don't know if the Kings game has started and anything has happened. I'm not near a TV. But that's the situation with the goaltending in Los Angeles for now.
How would you describe their performance against the Ottawa Senators in a throwback game from the 1980s?
That looked like that even in the 80s, though, you'd get a save every once in a while. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't pretty. And I think, you know, the disconcerting part, you know, Darcy Kuemper was, I would think it's fair to say, was their best player for the first two games. But there were three goals, at least I can recall, that were scored from distance. It was not a pretty game. And I think that there was, you know, people were clamoring for a goaltending change at some point. But the problem was is that, you know, the Kings, after being up 3-1 and 4-2, you know, came back and had to tie the game, I believe, at 5. And that's how they went to the break at the second period. And I think, you know, the feeling was, well, we're in a tie game and all we really need is Darcy to make one save. And so, you know, there was never the sense to pull him. It was a very disconcerting effort. And, you know, Pat, I think when you take a look at the first three games for this team, you know, Quentin Byfield said it best after their game in Boston, talking about the win at Buffalo, when he said, look, we had no business winning that game. We found a way to do it. You know, we weren't great today, you know, in Boston. And then it all kind of caught up to them in Ottawa. And the crazy thing, though, Pat, is at the end of the day, you know, they come away with, 3 points out of, you know, 4 points out of the first three games. So, you know, the numbers don't look so bad, but when you actually look at the performance, it's not so good.
Yeah. Okay, so it's been a rough start in Los Angeles, no doubt about it. And I'm curious as to how things play themselves out here. What about what's happening in Vegas? They lost for the first time on Tuesday night to Washington, so they're now 3-1 to start the year. What do we make of this 3-1 start for the Golden Knights?
Well, I think on the plus side, you know, you're looking at the performance of the top line with Barbashev, Eichel and Stone, and they've been virtually unstoppable. That's been really good. And you know, they've had good goaltending. I mean, Samsonov played well, I thought, in his one start, you know, against Anaheim over the weekend. That's a plus. But when you kind of take a look at their games, you know, they beat up on Colorado, but so is everybody else. They play St. Louis, who's on a back-to-back in three games in four nights. And I thought they played a good game for the most part, but at the end of the day, you know, they had to hang on and survive a late penalty to win that game 4-3. And then they're tied late in the game with Anaheim at 1 going to the third period, and they ended up pulling away and winning 3-1. So I wouldn't, you know, it hasn't been overly convincing. I don't, like, it's not dominating, but I think that they've played well enough. And then you get, you know, you go into Washington, a place where, one, they've had mild success. And then you've got a motivated Logan Thompson, who,
yeah,
you know, definitely revenge on his mind. And he was really good. And then the other, you know, the other disappointing news for Vegas is that Victor Olofsson goes down, and it looks like he's going to miss some time. And Olofsson, I think, what, had already 4 goals on the year. You know, that's been a great pickup for them.
Yeah. So that's not great, as he's off to a nice start and now on the shelf for the Vegas Golden Knights. Jonathan Davis is with us, our NHL Network insider, Pacific Division insider, spinning us around the Pacific Division. How about San Jose's start to the season? And they are they're playing some hard-nosed hockey, aren't they?
They sure are. And I think, you know, that's the one, you know, one of the things that Mike Greer focused on in the offseason was bringing in players that were going to be tougher to play against. And, you know, that's what they did, you know, with guys like a Cody Ceci and a Barkley Goudreau. And then, you know, you move guys out like, you know, Mike Hoffman and Philip Zadina. So they've definitely become tougher to play against. They, you know, look, they had that game against St. Louis. You know, they were up 4-1 in that game. And just what a crippling way to lose. You know, you get Macklin Celebrini right off the bat, has the goal and the assist, and there's all this excitement. And then the Blues do something that they had only done twice in 142 games, and that was erase a three-goal third period deficit. You know, they hung tough against Anaheim. And then, you know, the game last night against Dallas, I mean, I think on most nights, Pat, they're going to be just one goal short. But they're far more competitive than they were a year ago. Teams are definitely going to have to earn victories against them.
What's the update on a couple of the most important guys for them going forward? I guess give us the latest on Macklin Celebrini and his injury status. And on top of that, Yaroslav Askarov with a nice start to his season in the American League.
Yeah, so Celebrini, you know, lower body injury. And, they, you know, the Sharks had said that, you know, they're, you know, he was dealing with it before their home opener. He's eligible to come back October 18th against the Winnipeg Jets. In the case of Askarov, I mean, this is what a character he is. He plays his first game. You know, he's been dealing with injuries, so he didn't get to start the year in San Jose. He plays his first game for the Barracuda, and it's a 5-0 shutout for Askarov. And if you've ever seen his antics before from his days playing for the Predators farm team, you know, it was 2 years ago, he was doing pull-ups on the goalie net, pulled the net down off the moorings. In this case, he just dropped the net down to the ice, saying the door is closed. And, you know, I wonder if he tries that in the NHL. I don't know how well that would go over with some people. But, yeah, I mean, look, performance, both, you know, actual goaltending performance, and then he is an absolute character, something that
performance art.
Yes.
Hey, what's your impression of this? Now, the Oilers needed that comeback win in overtime on Tuesday night. Like, that was almost non-negotiable to wrap up their 4-game homestand to start the season. But what's your what have your observations been on Edmonton's 1-3 start to the season?
Well, I mean, they look like a team that's still reeling from losing Game 7 to the Florida Panthers. I mean, you know, more jump in the game, and, you know, look, the two fights that we saw late in the game, you know, the Setcher fight and the Corey Perry fight. I mean, that's just something, you know, that this team needed. You know, we needed to see that. anger. I mean, because I don't know why that didn't happen in the Calgary game. I mean, definitely a team that's struggling and trying to figure out their blue line. I mean, that's been the biggest hole for them. I mean, you know, you think about what they lost from last year with CC, Desharnais, and Broberg. And, you know, you're trying to fit guys in like Troy Stetcher and Ty Ambrim. And I know I'm missing one. And I know, Pat, help me out here. I'm missing one. But,
Travis Dermott.
Oh, Dermott. Yeah. So
I had to rack my brain as well. I'm like, who's on their blue line again?
I mean, so. Right, so you're trying to figure out that second pair. I mean, look, it's not going to be the same blue line, you know, that we see by the trade deadline. But, you know, they've got to find a way to survive it. Because, look, Connor McDavid, you know, is obviously a one-man transition game. But when he's not on the ice, they've got to figure out a way to move that puck. And it's been a struggle for them, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, and our final stop is where you are right now as we're talking. And that is the Anaheim Ducks. We talked about San Jose hanging tight against the Ducks, but Anaheim wins in San Jose, and an interesting guy on the ice late in the game too.
Yeah, so Trevor Zegras was on the ice for, you know, in the final minute, 1-0 game, and I thought, you know, it was very telling because the Anaheim Ducks have asked for Trevor Zegras to be more of that, to play more of that 200-foot game. And here, you know, he had been begging to want to be out there, you know, for that final minute, and he got his opportunity and he took advantage of it. So, you know, the narrative, you know, for the past couple of months is that, you know, were the Ducks going to move Zegras? Can he be the guy that they had hoped for? Well, look, they're asking something from him to be more of a complete player. We saw a glimpse of that in their game against San Jose. And so I think, you know, that to me was just one of the biggest takeaways.
Yeah. Players evolve, right? That you're not static as a hockey player all the time. Your overall thoughts as they get ready for their home opener on how things have started for the Anaheim Ducks?
I mean, they're going to be challenging for the last spot in the division, but they're more competitive. You know, they'll be competitive, and you know, the demand. You know, they've got a coach in Greg Cronin who is very demanding and holds players accountable. They're, you know, guys are 1 year older, as we all get each year. And so, you know, you hope you're going to be 1 year smarter. And look, if what we saw from Zegras is a glimpse of, you know, some of the maturation of this team, then they'll be in good shape. But let's make no mistake. They're a team that's going to be challenging, you know, likely for ninth spot in the conference.
Yeah. Ready for the home opener? Ready to see them in person for the first time this year?
I am. I love the unis. It's fun. It's nice to be back. In an NHL game for something that's meaningful. I mean, I took in a preseason game in LA, but yeah, it's nice. It's fun. It should be a nice night.
Enjoy yourself, my friend. We will talk to you next Wednesday. Get the latest on the Pacific Division. But as always, appreciate the spin. Thank you, JD.
Thank you, bud. Take care.
You as well. That is Jonathan Davis. He's our Pacific Division insider from NHL Network, and he joins us, and VSiN Sports now. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344 as we start to wrap things up this hour. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. We'll talk to you from the Pizza Pigout.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Thursday.
Let's go. One of my favorite events of the year.
Absolutely. Be well, pal. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.
You too.
Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Cam Hughes, Shan Vergy, our producers this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.